Right, good morning, everyone. My name's Peter. I'm still an alcoholic.
Hi, Peter.
I slept well. How about you guys?
Good.
I was exhausted. Okay, right, we're going to do three quick sessions and we're going to look at 10, 11, and 12. I'm just going to recap slightly and see where we are. I use Bill's story for this because Bill's story is very interesting. If we look on page 8 of the book, and there's some sort of chronology going on here. He was in Towns Hospital for the first time being treated for alcoholism, and he overheard Dr. Silkworth and his wife talking in the hallway. And Dr. Silkworth said that this guy, there's no hope for your husband. If he carries on drinking, he's either going to die or go insane. And Bill said, no words can tell the loneliness and despair I found, the bitter morass of self-pity, quicksand stretching all around me. I'd met my match, I was overwhelmed, alcohol was my master. That's Bill's first step, and it's around about the 11th of November, 1934. A month or so later, a few weeks later, Ebbie Thatcher, his old drinking buddy, turned up and sober, and Bill was drinking, and they started discussing what had happened to Ebbie, and Ebbie got sober on a spiritual program, and Bill kind of took his second step. It said it meant only a matter of willing to believe in a power greater than myself. Nothing more was required of me to make that beginning. That statement, the statement that you can choose your own conception of God, hit him hard. It melted the ice of the intellectual mountain in whose shadow I'd lived and shivered for many years. I stood in the sunlight at last. Bill took his second step, drunk. That's very interesting, isn't it? He goes in the hospital. And this is kind of recapping what we've done, what we talked about yesterday. The inside in hospital for his third treatment, around about the 11th or 12th of December 1935, he humbly offered himself, this on page 13, he humbly offered himself to God, as then I understood him, to do with me as he would. Step 3. I placed myself unreservedly in his care and direction. I admitted for the first time that I myself was nothing and that without him I was lost. I ruthlessly faced my sins, as he calls them there, and became willing to have my newfound friend take them away root and branch. It sounds like step 4, 5, 6, and 7. My schoolmate visited me. I fully acquainted him with my problems and deficiencies. I made a list of people I'd hurt and towards whom I felt resentment. That sounds like 5. And the beginning of 8. I expressed an entire willingness to approach individuals admitting my wrong. Step 9. Never was I to be critical then. I was to write all such matters the utmost of my ability. Step 9. I was to test my thinking, my new God consciousness within. Common sense would become uncommon sense. Testing my new God consciousness sounds to me like step 10. I was to sit quietly when in doubt, asking for direction and strength to meet my problems as he'd have me. Sounds like step 11. Never was I to pray for myself. But except my request bore on my usefulness to others, then only might I receive. Here's a promise, I might receive in great measure. And my friend promised, when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, and I would have all the elements of a way of living. Not just staying sober, but the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems, not just not drinking. Belief in the power of God plus enough willingness, honesty and humility to establish and maintain the order of things with the essential requirements. Simple but not easy, a price had to be paid. The price has to be paid is the destruction of self-centeredness. We saw yesterday that our problem is selfishness, self-centeredness. That is the root of our problem according to our basic text. This is a textbook, it's meant to be studied. I thought last night about the number of things that I missed out. I found over the years that this is layers. This book has layers and layers and layers and layers. And every time I revisit it, I get to see something new. around about the 15th or 16th of December, he had this mountaintop experience, and Dr. Silkworth came up to him and said, something has happened to you, I don't understand, but you'd better hang on to it. Anything is better than the way you were. And his friend emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating his principles in all my affairs, and particularly was it imperative to work with others as he'd work with me. So I lost that 12 to me. So Bill took somewhere around the 15th, so he went in about the 11th, and somewhere around the 16th of December, after looking through this program and doing the best he could, he had a spiritual awakening. Now, my spiritual, I've had a not an experience, but an awakening, a slow awakening over the years. Some of us have very large upheavals. Mine's been a very slow, thank goodness, been a very slow, very slow thing. And so, just reviewing it, it was very quick. They did, in the early days, when the people who wrote this book worked the program very quickly. The reason why they worked the program very quickly is they couldn't guarantee how long they were going to stop drinking. Because when I stop drinking, I get worse. My condition gets worse when I stop drinking. Because alcohol fixes what's wrong with me. Yeah, a week, 2 weeks, 6 months after not drinking, I'm nuts. I'm falling apart. I need something to fix me. What the program does, it accesses a power that fixes me. And I get, we looked at the promises yesterday. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, the ninth step. If we're painstaking about the ninth step, we're going to maze before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom, new happiness. We will not regress the past or wish to shut the door. The past becomes my greatest asset to take to a newcomer. My past, what happened to me in my past, is my greatest asset to identify with another drug. We will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. That's what I wanted, really. And it's interesting that the feeling of uselessness or self-pity would disappear. One of my problems is self-pity, selfishness, self-pity. We will lose interest in selfish things. We ask for those to be removed in the sixth step, they begin to get removed, or sixth and seventh step, they begin to get removed by work in the ninth step. That's how this works. And it's very, very interesting. That the self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and our life, we're trying to fear of people, and fear of people, fear goes away. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. That I've got power now. I've got power. And it says here, this in the book on page 84, it says, this brings us to the 10th step. We get brought by that power to the 10th step. I didn't get here on my own anymore. Which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously, is another very strong, they use very strong words in here, vigorously. That's, you know, let's kind of get a sweat up. Commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. Don't wait. Don't wait. Step 10 is accessing the power every day. It's very interesting. It says that this looks like it's in the wrong order. It says here we continue to watch. It says this is our next function. So we've had one function is to we've said yesterday that our main function was to be to fit ourselves to be of usefulness to others. Here's another function. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. How do I understand this program? How much do I understand about this? What am I trying to achieve here? And so it's telling me that I need to study. I need to find out how to do this. And believe me, anybody can do what we're doing. We're not special. Anybody can do what we're doing. Any member of Alcoholics Anonymous with the knowledge and the experience of working with stuff can do what we do. It's not special. It says it's no overnight matter. This continued for a lifetime. This should continue for a lifetime. This is what I do now. This is what I do for a lifetime. Now, some people say 10, 11, and 12 are the maintenance steps. They're the growth steps. They're the growth steps. I can't stay where I am halfway through my amends. I've got to grow. I've got to grow in effectiveness. I've got to grow in understanding. And it tells me what to do now. And it's during the day. This next paragraph tells me what to do during the day. And it tells me I continue to watch. What for? We've had these before. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Oh, those are the things we were looking for in our four step inventory. Though they haven't gone away. Continue to watch. Someone that I admire very much in Alcoholics Anonymous says that watch is a spiritual practice. I watch. I watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these things crop up, not if. When these things crop up, I ask God at once to remove them. I don't hang around in my resentments. I don't hang around in my dishonesty. I don't hang around in my fear once I recognize them. I have a tool now called fourth step inventory, where I can write stuff down on paper. I can write resentments down on paper. I can write fears down on paper. I can write my behavior down on paper. So we ask God at once to remove them. Next. So there's several instructions here. The first instruction, continue to watch. The second instruction, when these crop up, we ask God to immediately ask them to remove them. Third instruction, we discuss them with someone immediately. Sponsor. If you sponsor people, expect phone calls. And make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. Okay, so that contains step 4, step 5, step 6, step 7, step 8, and step 9 during the day. Then, another instruction, sounds like next to me. We resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I'm supposed to turn up in life with love and tolerance. Now here's, if you do that, here are the best promises in the book. And we have ceased fighting anyone and everything, even alcohol. That could be an instruction. Stop fighting everything. I've got to be told that, because it doesn't just happen. But this is amazing. For by this time, sanity will have returned. What did we mention in step 2? It was returns to sanity. Here it is in step 10. It's taken a while. We will seldom be... this is another promise. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil us from hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we will find that this has happened automatically. Automatically, no effort on my part. Only the effort of working the steps up to this point. We have seen that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our own part. It just comes. Now, in my understanding, this is why I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic. Before I got here, to this point, alcohol dominated my life. It dominated my thoughts. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. That's recovery. The problem has been removed. We're neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. It's the experience of the people who wrote the book. They're not making this up. They're saying that this is our experience. We can guarantee this. This is how we react so long as we keep in a fit spiritual condition. It now goes on to tell us how we stay in fit spiritual condition. It never leaves anything out in this book. It's easy to let on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. Laurels meaning achievements. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Subtle means sly, clever, devious, and difficult to detect. Okay, so I'm an alcoholic. My disease is sly, devious, clever, and difficult to detect. When I'm in it, I don't know I'm in it. That's why I need a sponsor. That's why I need a strong fellowship around me that care more about my life than my feelings. Yeah, I like fellowship around me that cares more about my life than my feelings, because they're going to tell me when I don't want to know when I'm acting out. Yeah. Foe is a personal enemy. It's not a whole, not an army. It's a personal enemy. So I have an enemy here, which is sly, clever, devious, and difficult to detect, waiting to get me personally. We are not cured of alcoholism. You see, when I say recovered, people hear cured. I'm not cured. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day we must carry the vision of God's will into all activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will be done with mine. These are the thoughts that must go with us constantly. There's another must. We can exercise our will, our willpower along this line. All we wish is the proper use of the will. Oh, I've got willpower. One of the things about resentment is that when I first saw resentment and equated it with anger, it said that I sort of thought that I wasn't allowed to get angry. And I used to bottle it up, and I ended up having rage attacks. So, and it's fine getting angry as long as I identify that I'm angry. And I can write down, I've got a tool now, I've got a four-step inventory tool, that if necessary, I'll write it down. I'm angry at. And I will write it down quickly, because I can't go through the day carrying that anger. Because if I go through that day carrying that anger, I've got a tool here. So I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment. Sometimes I can do it in my head, sometimes I've got to write it down. If we carefully follow directions, we have begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit in us. To an extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further. So, what this book is telling me that during the day, from as early as I possibly can, and I try and ask. Sponsees to when they get to step three to begin this idea of asking God in to the day, every day. And we'll look at step 11 in a minute, and that's how it works. In the old days, in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the early days, they insisted on quiet time in the morning more than meetings. The quiet time in the morning, which is 10-11, was more important to them than going to meetings. Because that's where we get the power. You see, it says here that I have a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day is the day when I must carry a vision of God's will into all my activities. How do I do that? I start the morning quiet. I start the morning quiet and ask God in, as we'll see in step 11, ask God in. I very, very quickly take it back. I'm in the car and we're traveling. It's a war zone. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to this. But when I do it, I am much calmer. I am much more able to do what I do. I'm much more able to go into all my activities with this feeling of everything's okay, and everybody else is okay too. It's cool, and I can do what I need to do. But it says here, to some extent, it doesn't say we're suddenly saintly. It says to some extent we have become God conscious, and we have begun, just begun. Here we are at step 10. We have just begun to feel this vital sixth sense, but it says we must go further, and that needs more action. This is action. It doesn't rest anywhere here. Here we go. There's this momentum that moves on. I don't get a whip out and whip sponsees and say, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. You do it at your time. How free do you want to be? How well do you want to be? How quick do you want to do this? You need power, access power quickly. You are powerless. If you've really taken step one, powerless over alcohol, you're powerless. If you've really taken step one, your life's unmanageable. You need power. Access that power quickly. That's what these guys did when they wrote the book. They accessed this power quickly. They knew how urgent this was. This is urgent. This kills me. It may not kill me quickly. Somebody once said, don't threaten me with death. Threaten me with a long life drinking or a long life untreated alcoholism. That's hell. I've been there. I know what it's like. I don't want to go back. Death doesn't frighten me. It would have been a relief. I can't live without this. This shows me, 10, 11, and 12 shows me how I can have a full and successful life. Again, it's simple. I mean, we both said it yesterday after we went through it. It is so simple. This is just so simple. There's nothing complicated in here. They've cut it down to the bare minimum because they know alcoholics are like. These guys were alcoholics. They had some kind of insight into by the time they've done this, insight into the way that they thought. And I will complicate anything. That's what I do. I complicate things. If I can get the discipline to stick to what has been said in here, one of the things, one of the problems that I find is you go to a step meeting, and I have never been to a step meeting yet that doesn't use the 12 and 12. I've hardly ever been to a step meeting that uses the big book. Now, in the foreword or preface to the 12 and 12, it says something like the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is the manual, if you like, that tells you how to do the steps. The 12 and 12 was a set of essays written by Bill W. to pad out the essays that he wrote to publicize the 12 traditions. He was persuaded to do it by the editors who said, well, this is too thin. What we need is a bit of a book. Couldn't you write some essays on the 12 steps from your perspective of something like somewhere between 7 and 12 years sober? And that's what he did. Now, there is no directions in the 12 and 12 on how to take the steps. They are essays. They're wonderful if you're down the line a while and you want to get some greater ideas and depth around each step. But for a newcomer working the steps the first time, I look at step 4 in the 12 and 12 and I am mystified. It confuses me. I can't do it. So why? I don't understand why we study it in step meetings. I don't understand. There's like something like 40 pages here, which gives us all the directions that we need to work the steps, and it is simple. If you read Bill's essays as he went on along, he wrote essays on the. I mean, Bill was an alcoholic. He was also a night school lawyer. And if you read his essays you read the book, it's fabulous. You read the essays on the 12 steps, they start to get complicated. The traditions are fabulous. You read the essays that he wrote on the concepts of world service, and you need a legal dictionary. They are very complicated. Bill was a very complicated guy. And that's why this book is so simple, is because he sent out stuff to the other groups and they said, this is too complicated, Bill. Let's just keep it down to this. Let's keep it simple. Dr. Bob's last words, the last time Bill saw Dr. Bob, was he said, as Bob walked down as Bill walked down the garden, the old guy was leaning on the door, barely able to stand up. Said to him, "Bill, let's just keep this simple." Simple but not easy, but it's simple. It needs to be simple. I need to be able to do this when I'm bouncing around the floor, just coming into an AA meeting because I need power. It's got to be able to be done quickly.
Thanks, Peter. My name is Simon Clark. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Good to be back this morning, and thanks for turning up. I see a few of the same faces here from yesterday, so that's good. I echo Peter's words on the simplicity of the way of living in step 10. And if you look at pages 84 to 85 that tell you what step 10 is, you will notice that there are four things I need to do on a daily basis and one prayer in a page and a half. So with those four things I need to do on a daily basis, which is continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear, when they crop up, ask God at once to remove them, discuss them with someone immediately, make amends quickly, if I harm anyone, and turn my thoughts towards somebody I could help. That's like a daily mechanism for me. It becomes a way of living in practice. There are four simple things for me to do there on a daily basis. The rest of this page and a half is full up with promises. There's a prayer here. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Four simple things in a prayer with a bunch of very heavy promises for the real alcoholic. It's very, very simple, step 10. One thing that I've learned the hard way is that I've learned to discuss selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear during the day with someone immediately, not dump it. And I had to learn the hard way with that. I also learned that I don't go into a meeting and share my selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear in 1 hour in the day when we have to talk about God and the steps. I go before the meeting to, if I need to discuss selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear, or I stay after the meeting to do it, but I never share my selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear in 1 hour when we have to carry this message to the newcomer. work daily with this. What I find is that the more that I am practicing 10, 11, and the more I'm involved in 12, and the night, the more free of selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear I am when I'm working with others. When it comes up, not if it comes up, as Peter mentioned. And you see, ultimately, my first action is to go to God. I go to God at once before I go to human power. That's interesting. God could and would if he was sought. No human power can relieve my alcoholism. You see where they're asking us to turn to? Towards God first. Then we discuss them with somebody immediately. So I go to the real power before I go to human power. Make amends quickly and then turn my thoughts towards somebody that I can help. And that can be... I have a job which I'm generally at between 8 o'clock in the morning and 7 p.m. at night, or sometimes a bit earlier. Sometimes I will pick up resentment or fear will arise within a business situation at work. I go to God quietly and ask him to remove it. I will then call my sponsor. And sometimes if I need to make amends, I'll go and clean it up really immediately, because I need to get unblocked of what's blocking me. And you know when you're blocked because you start to become restless, irritable, discontent. And I know when I'm blocked. Sometimes I turn my thoughts towards someone I can help in the business environment. You know, being making my boss a cup of tea, or making the assistant a cup of tea, or trying to help them, asking if there's anything I can do to help them to get out of self, to get away from what's blocking me. Sometimes it was well in the home, and it can be anywhere I can turn my thoughts towards somebody I can help. The promises around the 10th step are, for me, some of the biggest in the book. You know, especially these two. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. What it doesn't say there is that you will always be recovering. And this is free and available for everybody. This is not exclusive. The book is Alcoholics Anonymous. This is why the success rates in the early days were so strong. If you turn towards the foreword to the second edition, you'll see that the book was being sent out, 800 frantic inquiries, and then several months later, 800 people were on their way to recovery. Why? Because the book was being sent out to people. People were following the instructions in the book, turning around and working with others, and the success rates were so high. The book is Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a student and practitioner of the big book Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you now from my own experience, everything that it gets promised in here, I have experienced and continue to experience. I'm here to share with you that if you are a real alcoholic and if you want this solution, you can experience the same deal. Also says that Alcoholics Anonymous, it says it is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action. Alcoholics Anonymous is a spiritual program of action. Subtle foe. Yeah, I also heard it was artful and crafty. Artful and crafty. Someone else told me it was hiding in the shadows, waiting to pounce. Great words for alcoholism. I understand that. Because when I'm in selfishness and self-centeredness, I don't always know I'm in it. Inventory will reveal to me that I am. Delusion will tell me, if you ask me during the day, hi Simon, how's it going? Yeah, fine, you know, I'm working with these guys, it's going well, it's going well, it's going great during the day. But when I come to do a nightly review that we'll talk about in step 11, the nightly review will actually reveal the truth. And I have to watch for this stuff. That's the selfishness I need to watch for, the self-delusion. Because I want everybody to see, you know, I put on my AA game face, and isn't he a good group member, a good member of intergroup, a great sponsee? Look how well he's doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I pretend, like we read yesterday, each alcoholic is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. But I'll get to the end of the night in a nightly review, and inventory will reveal something different. But my pride will prevent me from telling you the truth. And I really have to watch for this stuff. My experience has been is that the more I practice this, and it is a discipline in 10, the more I practice it and incorporate it into my day, the more free I become. And the less full up my nightly review is in step 11. The less noisy my head is first thing in the morning. And I like paybacks. Effort and paybacks. You know, I love to feel free. I love to wake up in the morning with my head quiet. I love to go to bed at night with my heart at ease and my mind at peace. Feeling the presence of this power. And I have to watch for this stuff. Sponsorship in 10 and 11, I've experienced first class sponsorship around 10 and 11. It's not really the mistakes that I'm making that is the problem. It's me justifying the mistakes that I'm making. And I have to remain truthful about this, you know? And my ego and my character will say, I can't go to my sponsor with this because I've created the situation that aren't I just a model sponsee? And I can't let him know that I'm suffering in this area because look at what I'm doing over here. I have to level my pride, and this is where I'm going on. And ultimately, as we read in the previous page or two, it says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Step 10 unblocks me and enables me to achieve that. And as a result of that, I'm a much more effective employee at work. I'm a much more effective, as a group member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous. I'm much more effective in my family relations. I'm much more effective as being a friend. So I'm not stuck in me. I have a way out of doing that during the day, so that I can pack into the mainstream of life as it asks me to do in step 11. Sometimes I'm not always able to pick the phone up and discuss it at once with somebody. Sometimes I'm in a business situation and I'm unable to do that. That's why I go to God first. That's why the book asked me to go to God first, because my real reliance is upon that power I call God. We're not cured of alcoholism. And I agree with Peter. I introduce myself as a man who has recovered. It's been my experience. It's what the book asks me to do when working with others. I'm not cured of alcoholism. I have a daily reprieve, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, not contingent on the maintenance of 90 meetings in 90 days, on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And the reason I share things like that with you is because I'm talking from experience here of trying every other way of getting sober. Through treatment facilities, through a detox, through therapists, through counsellors, and through what I call middle of the road Alcoholics Anonymous. Which is information very contrary to the information that gives me access to God out of the big book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a real alcoholic. I needed the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tried every other imaginable remedy suggested to me by well-meaning members of Alcoholics Anonymous. I needed the spiritual experience in order to get sober. It's the only thing that's worked for me. And I'll challenge that information when I hear that information. Just don't drink, go to meetings, do 90 meetings in 90 days. I will challenge that information, because for the real alcoholic, that type of information, it will not work. I'm done with step 10. Thanks.
Thank you.
Just, it's interesting, I couldn't figure this out for a long time, because it says that this is, it sort of says that we continue to watch for sufferings, resentment, and fear. And if we, when we start to look at step 11, it says, which suggests prayer and meditation, it says when we retire at night. And then further down the page it says on awakening. It sounded like it was backwards to me. But then someone explained to me, they said, well, doesn't it say that after you've done your fifth step, you go back home and you're quiet for an hour? Well, if you've done a really good fifth step, it's probably going to take you pretty much all day. And so you go home in the evening and you sit quiet for an hour and you take your book down from the shelf and you read your bits and pieces and you do your six and you do the seventh step prayer and you go to bed and you sleep really well, probably for the first time in a little while. And then it says the next day, we go out on a vigorous action and we start knocking on doors. So this is now the next day. Now it says while we're knocking on the doors, we continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear. So here we are in the day. At the end of that day, you see how quick this is. At the end of that day, we retire and we constructively review our day. Now, I didn't see step 10 as a practice that I should do every day for years in Alcoholics Anonymous. For years. I think if I'd have been watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment and fear, maybe at 16 years sober I wouldn't have got myself into the situation that I got myself into. Where I ended up locking myself in a room and wanting to die. Dry, completely without, and knowing that I couldn't drink, and that's the other deal, knowing that I couldn't drink because I was an alcoholic, but there was some other stuff that was looking very attractive. And I went to see a doctor and I said to the doctor, look, I'm an alcoholic and I don't want anything, I don't want to take anything for the way that I'm feeling, but can you help me because I'm dying. And luckily, he was a GP who understood alcoholics,
and he sent me to see a cognitive therapist. Now, what was very interesting, after three sessions with the cognitive therapist, in the meantime I had gone back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and someone in the room was wise enough to hand me this book and say, about time you worked the steps again. You see, one of the things that happened was, a long time ago, I heard a tape by someone, a guy called Clarence S., and I do apologise, this has been an open thing. I've got to say that I actually mentioned some surnames of some members of Alcoholics Anonymous yesterday. They are dead, but I mentioned them. This is an open deal, and I shouldn't have done that. And I do apologise for that. And Clarence said, you did the first 9 steps once, you don't ever have to do them again. And I believed that. And I believed that. But what I wasn't doing was living in 10 and 11. I didn't continue to watch. I didn't continue to take inventory. I didn't do nightly review. And what that happened was that I got into selfishness. I got into dishonesty. I got into resentment. I was in fear. And in that fear, I wanted mine, and I went down this route. And I was with this cognitive therapist. And the third session I went to this cognitive therapist, I had all this stuff. All these handouts and stuff, and in my pocket I had the little card that had the 12 traditions and 12 steps on it, and I handed this to her and I said, you know, this is great, but you see these 12 things here, I think I ought to be doing these. And she looked at them and she said, yeah, I reckon you should. Bye bye. And I never went again. You know, and I haven't needed to change the way that I'm feeling since I got sober. I've wanted to many times. You see, what happens is this. Look at Bill's story again. This is great, because this really tells me that he's a real alcoholic. He's had this experience that's nearly kicked him out of bed. He's had this white light. He's been up on a mountain. The wind's been blowing through him. He's seen God. He has seen God. And it says that his friend emphasized the absolute necessity. After he gets out of hospital, he says that if an alcoholic failed to enlarge and perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice of others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he didn't work, he'd surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Faith without works would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. I have to take action. And then he says, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm for the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problems. That was an original thought of Bill's. It was brilliant. I was fortunate, for my old business association remained skeptical for a year and a half, during which time I found little work. That was a bit of a gift, really, so he could do a lot of work with other alcoholics. I was not too well at the time. I was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. He's had this white light experience on the top of a mountain, yet 6 months later, he can't get out of bed. Seriously, he can't get out of bed. He had imaginary ulcers and all sorts of strange stuff. You see? So, this is what happens to us. So don't be surprised if somewhere down the line you get depressed. Somewhere down the line, you don't feel good. But we've now got a set of tools. We've now got a set of tools, and we're just going to come to one of the most powerful tools. We've now got a set of tools. The really big, powerful tool for me is the inventory process, because it gets me to see what's wrong with me. The next one is this next one, this prayer and meditation, step 11. And I'm going to do it backwards. I'm going to go to On Awakening. Because this is what they emphasized in the old days to newcomers. This is what they emphasized. They emphasized this. It says, halfway down page 86, it says, on awakening, let us look at the 24 hours ahead. So, as I awake, yeah? Now, again, if you want proof of that there's a power at work here, unless you have an alarm clock that wakes you, do you just awaken some mornings? Generally, I kind of wake up now. I wake up around 6 o'clock.
I get awakened in the morning. Upon awakening, let us look at the 24 hours ahead. Now, again, this is backwards. It says, but we consider our plans for the day. Full stop. Before we begin to consider our plans for the day, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that there be divorce from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motives. I do that in bed. It's a discipline I do in bed. I wake up and I say, please God, divorce me from self-pity, dishonesty, and self-seeking motives today. Then I have a little thing that I do. I use the third step prayer. I use the seventh step prayer. I consider my day. I sit quiet. It says, under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. Now, when I came here, I couldn't trust my thinking. I was insane. It tells me in step two, I'm insane. It says, restore me to sanity. I'm nuts. I couldn't trust my thinking. Now it's telling me in step 11, I can trust my thinking. Why? Because I'm accessing a power. I can begin to trust my thinking. We can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will, not maybe, will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear with wrong motives. Inventory process. I find out what my motives are. I'm selfish. I'm self-seeking. I'm dishonest. I want those taken away. You notice that they keep on about this. It's the same defects all the way through. It's the same defects before. It's the same defects to be taken away in 5. We're watching the same defects in 10. Now we're asking them in 11 to be taken away. The same defects. Self-pity. Self-seeking. Dishonesty. Yeah. It says, again, it goes back to that thing in the book. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our problem. I have a disorder of self. Yeah. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. I'm thinking about my day. I'm planning my day. I may face indecision. What do I do with that? Scream and shout and rush about. No. That's what I used to do. I used to go, ah. No, it says no. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here is another prayer. We ask God for inspiration or intuitive thought or decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We relax and take it easy. We will be surprised how the right answers come when we've tried that for a while. So what I do is I sit quiet. I sit quiet. I've learned to meditate. I sit quiet. I try and stop the noise in my head. I can't stop it. I detach from it. I sit quiet. I think about my day ahead. I think about what's going to happen in the day ahead. Sometimes I don't even do that. I think, well, I've got to do this, that, and the other thing today. Okay, just go quiet. Just go quiet. I don't get any great inspiration. I don't get quiet very often. I got a noisy head. But it tells, that's what I'm supposed to do at the beginning of the day. And in the early days, they say, set this aside. Set this as time aside. I timed it this morning. It takes me about 45 minutes. I set aside 45 minutes. Somebody said a long time ago, God's doing all this stuff for you, keeping you sober. How much time are you spending with God? And at that time it was about 3 minutes in the shower or whatever, and I was in my day. Yeah, and it's asking me here that I consider my plans for the day before I start. I look at what's going to happen. I sit quiet and I ask for the power. Yeah, and as I say, in the old days, these guys were really keen on this. And it says, and there's a warning here. The first of all is a promise, and what used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration will gradually become a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced, here's a warning, being still inexperienced, at this seeking guidance stuff, and having just made conscious contact with God, and this is what we're doing when we're being quiet, praying is asking, quiet time, meditation if you like, is listening for the answer. It is not probable we're going to be inspired at all times. We may pay for this presumption with all kinds of absurd actions and ideas. When you sponsor a few newcomers, you what's that? Newcomers' ideas, I love them. They come along and tell me all their ideas. Wow, I'm going to go to India, I'm going to go do that. Yeah, wow, terrific stuff. I love it, it's a great blessing. I said, God's leading me, fine, go. Go. You know, wonderful stuff, you know, really wonderful stuff. But you see, they know what's going to happen. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be patient. Be patient. As time passes, be more and more on a plane of inspiration. And we come to rely upon it. Now, the last thing on earth that an alcoholic is patient. I want it now. If not now, 10 minutes ago. And usually I want yours. Whatever it is. Yesterday. So, I'm beginning to learn how to live. I'm beginning to get the power to lose what was happening to me and learn how to live. This is a way of living. And so these aren't this idea that you do the first 9 steps and you never have to visit them again. As long as I'm doing 10 and 11 take me back to step one. On a daily basis, I look at it and go, am I powers over alcohol? 25 years sober? Haven't touched drink or drugs in 25 years? Am I really powerless? Am I really powerless today? Is my life unmanageable today? Watch me. Watch me start to manage it. Watch what happens when I start to put my will into my life. Am I beginning to have a conscious contact? Sometimes I don't know. But I'm beginning to get trust that something is there. I'm beginning to get trust that I'm beginning to get guidance in all this. Yeah. And it says, very quickly, we usually can conclude this period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown throughout the day what my next step is to be. That we be given whatever we need to take care of our such problems, and we ask especially from the freedom of self-will and are careful not to request for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others may be helped. I keep on asking for a bigger car so I can take more people to meetings.
Hasn't happened yet.
We are careful.
Huh? You've got one with 4 seats now, not 2.
Oh, right, okay. I had a van before, yeah. So I've got a real car now. We're careful never to pray for our own selfish, and many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that. It doesn't work, you need to see why. Because we're trying to lose selfishness. We're trying to lose self-esteem. So that's what I do. That's what we do. That's telling us what to do at the beginning of the day. You got anything to finish us off on?
Absolutely. I'll just cover what I do at night and tie that in with some stuff on the bottom of 87. That was excellent for you, broken down like that. I keep it real simple. You know, I do what the first 100 do. And suggest me to do. And my morning is religious and it is disciplined around exactly that. At night, the top of 86 says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Notice the word discussed and at once. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others or what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. Not myself, others. We're becoming others focused. After making our review, here's the prayer. We ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. It really makes no difference to me how I do that. I have a step 10 and 11 nightly review form that we can email you, or I can email you if you'd like it, which is basically these questions set out on a piece of paper. What I've done is I try and alternate between either filling this out at night, and I make 10 minutes at night, right at the end, just before I go to bed, and I sit quiet at times, and I review my day. And it says, if you've been resentful, do a four-column inventory on the back of this sheet. I'll do the four-column inventory on the back of that sheet. It gets me to consider certain things. So we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed at another person at once. I try and be with my sponsor. He knows everything about my life, everything that's going on, every decision I'm taking, what I'm doing most of the time, because I need to be transparent for him to see my blind spot. So if I'm progressing in a relationship, I will be open and honest with him about that. This is what's happening in my life right now, and I try not to hold it, keep it to myself. This is constructively review our day. You know, it's not a weapon to beat ourselves over the head with if we had a bad day. And I have to ask myself these questions. Was I kind and loving toward all? Not 100% of the time, no. You know, I was a little bit quick with the assistant at work today. I was a little bit short. I wasn't open with her. I was a little bit too consumed with what I was doing. Okay, God, here's the prayer. God, please forgive me. Please show me what corrective measures should be taken. And generally, it comes immediately. Well, maybe tomorrow, Simon, you try and be a little bit more relaxed with her. Open and tolerant and helpful. On that nightly review form, it also asked me, what did I do for others today? Now, one thing that's really interesting is, if I'm in self, I'd have a full four column inventory at the back of that paper, and very, very little in the column that says, what did I do for others? Right? If I'm in fit spiritual condition, there is very few or literally no resentment, but the column that asks me what I did for others is packed. Interesting, huh? Selfishness, self-centeredness is the root of my trouble. And I need to be working with others, which we're going to go on to in the next session. And as a result of that, I become freer. I'm not so in self. But when I'm in self, and that column, what I've done for others, is empty, I'm in trouble. And I try and do that. Now, it doesn't make any difference to me whether I do that written, or if I sit on the edge of my bed, if I'm absolutely wiped out, and I honestly answer myself these questions. And if there is an amends that need to be made for the following day, I'll just write the person's name down. And then the following morning, I'll get up and I'll either get on the phone, or I'll meet them face to face and make an amend. Or there's some stuff that's come up, I'll bring it into a discussion with my sponsor the following morning. But again, you know, it says here, we go to God. Again. After making a review, we ask God's forgiveness and we inquire what corrective measures should be taken. There's our real reliance and our real dependence. I don't need to hear myself say that too. Real dependence is upon God. That's what I do at night. And I try and do that every night. And I try and maintain this 10 and 11 practice as a discipline. And as I say, I can either write it down or I can sit on the edge of my bed and just answer these questions. I won't recover what Peter covered, because he covered that in such masterly detail, but the bottom here of 87, if you were like me, I was not part of a religious denomination. I was not a Catholic, a Christian, a Muslim, or anything like that. I'll be honest with you, I was arrogant and selfish, and I turned my back on that stuff at a very, very early age. Didn't want anything to do with it. Okay? It was arrogant and it was selfish. And even back then, I was playing God. I didn't need God. And somebody once said to me, I treated God like people and people like God. I treated God like people and people like God. Turn my back on it. And I knew that there was a power out there, because it had done for me what I couldn't do for myself. It had removed the obsession to drink, and it had taken away this spiritual malady that had been living and breathing inside of me since day one. And I knew that there was a power out there. I knew that I'd recovered from alcoholism, but I needed to seek in understanding and effectiveness. I knew that there was a power out there, but I needed to grow in understanding and effectiveness around that power. And it also says at the bottom here, and this is why I'm mentioning it, there are many helpful books also. I've been taught by my sponsor and by other good teachers in Alcoholics Anonymous where to go to find these books. And I'll share it with you today if it helps you. There is a spiritual author by the name of Eckhart Tolle, or Eckhart Tolle. There are two publications that I've read and that I continue to read. One is called The Power of Now, and the other one that I've recently read and lent out again is called A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. There are also another author by the name of Anthony DeMello, where I've read a book called Awareness. I'm reading a book called A Contact with God. I'm reading a book called Conversation with the Masters by Anthony DeMello. He also wrote Sadhana. And I've read a lot of these books and continue to read these books because it gives me an understanding around this power that I call God. And it helps me to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And I need to continue to seek my understanding and effectiveness of that power. Those books have helped me to gain insight and to seek where this power is and what this power is. And as a result of that, that's helped me. There are also many spiritual practices in that book that I have done at the time, but I need to keep. I find it useful to do, and again I've learned this in Alcoholics Anonymous by good teachers, to do along with the 11th step, not instead of the 11th step. And I have seen, I've worked with men who have got to the 9th step, they're quick to see where religious people are right, and they're gone. And one of those individuals, Wednesday just passed, telephoned after 18 months of not being in contact with Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had drunk again. He was very quick to see where religious people were right, made use of what they had to offer 100% of the time, not along with step 11. He got drunk. I remember Peter sharing with me, he's seen people at 11th step themselves out of the program. I've now experienced and seen and watched that happen. It says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated, doubtful, and ask for the right thought or action. I'm an alcoholic. Most of the time, I'm agitated and doubtful. It's quite a natural state for an alcoholic to be agitated and doubtful. Again, we turn to God. We ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves that we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves, many times each day, thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. This is conscious contact with this power throughout the day. Sometimes I lose it. And I'll share with you that I do fall short of this by thought, word, and deed. But I grow in understanding and effectiveness. We become much more efficient. And I'll share this with you this morning as well. My efficiency within the company that I work for today has increased so much after doing 10 and 11 practices. I'm a much more effective employee. I'm much more effective with the people around me during the day. I'm much more effective with people in the building and the apartment that I live in. much more effective, and it is absolutely life changing, these practices, which means I'm less on the phone to my sponsor, which frees him up, and I'm more effective with everybody else around me. We don't tire so easily. How many times have we got back from AA meetings at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night? I'm wiped out, I'm tired. I was, in the first couple of years of my sobriety, I was shattered because I was still making decisions based on self. I was still running on self-will. Tired all the time. It amazes me today. I'm up at most mornings at 7 a.m. most mornings, and I try and spend 20 minutes to 30 minutes with God immediately. My day goes so fast and my days are so packed that I generally sit down and do a nightly review and it's like 1:30 a.m. I've been effective in my employment with people during the day. Generally I have a prospect or protege around my apartment most nights at the moment, not all nights, but most nights, doing step work. I've been effective in my home group that evening. I've come back, I've paid attention to a relationship that I have at the moment, I've paid attention to my family, I've paid attention to the things that need to be done in the day, and it's like 1 a.m. And I'm now surviving on 6 hours sleep a night. I used to need 9 to 10 hours sleep a night. Now I run on power, and I get six hours sleep a night, and I feel great. And I thank God for this replenishing sleep. I also work with this... We were in Texas in March and visited a friend's treatment centre in Texas, and there's a little thing here called the spiritual prayer book that they use up at that facility in Texas, and you know, there's some great prayers that I can incorporate in my prayer life, in my meditation life. Great prayers, really, really simple prayers. I'll just read this one as well for the new, I know there's some new people in this room this morning. And I'd like to welcome the young girl back who we saw yesterday, and welcome you back this morning as well. But listen to this for a beginner's prayer. Lord, I want to love you, yet I'm not sure. I want to trust you, yet I am afraid of being taken in. I know I need you, but I'm ashamed of the need. I want to pray, but I'm afraid of being a hypocrite. I need my independence, but yet I fear to be alone. I want to belong, yet I must be myself. Take me, Lord, yet leave me alone, Lord. I believe, help my unbelief. Lord, if you are there, you do understand, don't you? Give me what I need, but leave me free to choose. Help me work it out my own way, but don't let me go. Let me understand myself, but don't let me despair. Come to me, Lord, I want you here. Lighten my darkness, but don't dazzle me. Help me to see what I need to do and give me the strength to do it. Help my unbelief. Amen. You know, there's some really simple prayers in this book, and again, we can make copies and send them to you or email them to you as well. But there's other stuff that I incorporate in with this. Very simple prayers. Just before we close, because I know it's just about time to finish this session, we're undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we've just outlined. But that is not all. And oh no, it's not. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And that's something we're going to be talking about with some enthusiasm and passion in the next session. So thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.